You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Crush keeps running along at record levels, and we do have soybean oil stocks.
Ted Seifert, Vice President, Zahner Ag Hedge.
Even though they're maybe tighter than you would expect for the crush to be, crush being as strong as it is, so we are using a lot of soybean oil, but we are not in a tight situation when it comes to soybean oil, which is why it's allowed to sort of come down along with soybeans.
Diesel demand is running above last year, but inventories remain historically tight, so it's leaving farms and freight networks exposed to the supply disruptions. Energy Information Administration data, though, shows distillate fuel supplied averaged 3.7 million barrels daily over 4 weeks, and that's up 4.7%. So the idea, tighter diesel supplies could open the door for biofuels. High beef prices likely to persist because rebuilding the U.S. cattle herd will take years, even if ranchers begin retaining more females now. UC Berkeley Ag Economics doctoral student Ilaria Dalbarco writes in Ag Data News that tight inventories, drought losses, and slow biological production continue limiting supplies. Now, cattle production adjusts more slowly than poultry or pork, so producers have to retain heifers, breed them, raise calves, and then wait for those animals to reach market weight before additional beef will reach consumers. Current prices also creating a difficult ranch-level choice. Selling heifers generates strong immediate revenue, while retaining them delays the income and actually exposes producers to uncertain future prices, feed cost, and pasture conditions. Speaking of uncertain, Mexican mango growers reportedly slowing harvest. That after a sudden price breakdown, even though broader supply data recently pointed toward fewer mangoes and stronger values. Mango World magazine publisher Will Caven reports consignment sales overwhelm some channels, push returns below production and transportation cost. Now, the warning conflicts with earlier industry fundamentals. National Mango Board projections were showing Mexican shipments finishing about 14% below last season, while combined near-term supplies for major origins were expected to fall 27%. But regional timing led to a contradiction. We talk about consignments. Producers in Mexico don't get paid until their product is sold in the U.S. All of it arrived at the same time, which caused prices to collapse. U.S. natural gas power development accelerating, but equipment delays, grid constraints, and rising financing costs could keep electricity prices elevated for rural consumers. Cobank Energy says announced projects may arrive more slowly than growing demand requires. Gas-fired capacity under development has more than tripled in 2 years thanks to data centers. S&P Global projects data center electricity will rise from 76 gigawatts this year to 134 by the year 2030. It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Because of the environment we're controlling in there, we actually want to be careful of anything we bring into the greenhouse because it could introduce some sort of contaminant. In particular, water is critical to growing.
Scott Bradley is president of Georgia-based Cox Farms.
We source our water from municipal drinking water systems or from well water. So the same water you would drink at your house. We actually take additional steps just as extra insurance. So we monitor the incoming water for any sort of contaminants. And then we also do extra steps like reverse osmosis, filtration, as well as UV light to sterilize that water. And once we bring the water in, it's a closed loop. So we feed the water to the plants. What the plants don't take, we recycle, we sterilize it again, we adjust the nutrients, and we send it back out to the plant. So it's a super efficient process, but it's also a process that creates a little bit of insulation from some of those external environmental factors.
Normally, when we think of vegetable crops, specialty crops, we think of labor.
Yeah, so we bring in things like seeds and media to grow in. Think of this as a highly automated process. That's one of the things that we can do really well in the greenhouse is use, you know, equipment to do the job, the hard jobs that are typically done in the field. And so we bring those seeds in, you know, we plant them, we germinate them, and then we move them through the greenhouse where we have glass panels. We use every bit of natural light we possibly can to grow that lettuce. And over the course of about 21 days, it moves throughout the greenhouse and is ultimately harvested with little to no human interaction. So I always tell people the last person to touch your lettuce was the one pouring the seeds in the hopper. The next person to touch it is the one that loaded it on the truck. And the whole goal of that is to ensure that we can offer our consumers a product that is pesticide free, herbicide free, that the first human hands that actually touch that leaf of lettuce are you in your own home, which is what gives us the ability to sell a product that is no need to wash and ready to eat.
While the recent focus has been on lettuce, Bradley says,
We continue to look for opportunities to grow. So we're in, you know, lots of crops. We actually grow tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, strawberries, and lettuce. Tomatoes, peppers, and cucumbers went into the greenhouse, you know, 40 years ago. They started migrating into the greenhouse. And of course, lettuce and strawberries are new things to the greenhouse because of the technology and automation have unlocked our ability, you know, to do it at a cost-effective price. The lettuce and strawberries are also things that don't travel very well. They're also things that tend to soak up a lot of anything you put on them. And so, you know, we believe we have a big advantage growing in our greenhouses, not just because we can grow under those ideal conditions, but we also can grow closer to the point of consumption where we can, you know, grow them until they're very ripe, pick them, and then give that shelf life to our customers, you know, versus it spending its life on the back of a truck, you know, traveling across the country. And so those areas for us are high growth. And of course, we'll continue, you know, to try to grow. We're mostly focused in the eastern United States today. You know, we have goal aspirations to grow, obviously, nationwide and be able to supply all of North America in the future.
As a consumer, how can you tell the difference?
Bright Farms is the easiest way to know that it's greenhouse grown. But I always tell people sometimes we sell under private label but it will always say greenhouse grown. And so I tell people, look for the words greenhouse grown. Then you're going to know it's grown in this protected environment and truly minimizes your risk, you know, of some of the bad things that are out there that can get on these products.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
As the rate of global population growth begins to slow and eventually halts altogether, U.S. agriculture will see a paradigm shift. One important question that arises is whether an increase in per capita food consumption can offset a decline in the world population.
Matt Clark is executive head of Terrain.
My analysis finds that increasing food consumption can offset population decline for only a short period of time. Over the long term, many top importers of U.S. agricultural goods are likely to reach a maximum caloric intake. For U.S. agricultural exports, the peak amount of total food available is perhaps more important than the date itself. In this calculation of total addressable market, population size matters. A country that has high consumption per capita but a low population has a smaller total addressable market. For example, in 2037, China will command 24% and India will command about 19% of total calories available of the current top 75 trade partners. However, by 2056, when India peaks, the two will be nearly equal. Notably, for bulk production, finding a counterweight to these two countries, both in sheer population size and calories available per capita, will be a challenge for the agricultural industry. As a potential canary in the coal mine, our analysis indicates that 13 of the current top 75 trade partners have already peaked in their total calories available. Total U.S. exports to these countries grew at a compounded annual growth rate of 1.7% from 2000 to 2025. Comparatively, exports to the other 62 countries grew at a rate of 5.5%. When factoring in inflation, exports to the 13 countries that have peaked in total calories available have declined in value and now make up about 15% of export mix, down from a high of 37% in 1993. Our analysis finds that in the short term, increasing consumption can offset population decline, but in the long run, population decline outweighs a constant increase in consumption. In the very near future, these impacts are unlikely to be felt in the aggregate. But the industry has already seen the long-term impact of shifting partner primacy, as some partners have reduced their total caloric needs. In the short term, U.S. agriculture is likely to continue along the current path. The majority of the export partners will continue to grow their total available food needs, and the U.S. should be modestly well-positioned to continue to sell into those markets. The U.S. agricultural trade industry should work to continue to develop new export markets and high-growth areas to push the future date of peak calories further into the future. Returns on this type of market development are unlikely to materialize in early stages, but could pay large dividends in future years as many current trade partners begin to decrease their calorie needs. In the long run, this analysis furthers a broader point of the big shrink. There is not a never-ending increase in the total addressable market as measured by total caloric intake for U.S. agricultural exports. There will be an eventual paradigm shift in agricultural production. The shifts that seem most likely are: 1. An increased importance of protein and similarly nutrient-dense products. It is likely that products will slowly take the narrative from commodities, which may increase the share of domestically processed foods. Terrain's economist Ben Lane has detailed how dairy could benefit from these shifts. Number 2. A decreased importance of bulk commodity shipments that meet the minimum specifications. The market for these products will likely continue to drive towards the lowest cost producer on a global scale, and commodity prices are likely to remain volatile only during sharp production issues. The U.S. industry will need to be more mindful of its comparative cost advantages to other exporting countries by means of transportation costs, middleman margins, and trade agreements. Number 3. An increasing complexity of export markets and policy to meet the bifurcated needs of more products and fewer bulk commodities. Number 4. A much stronger focus on growing domestic consumption of U.S. goods, including agricultural feedstock-based renewable energy and tailored approaches to growing demand for U.S. goods in high-growth potential countries.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
During our committee's February USMCA hearing, my colleagues made clear on a bipartisan basis that the USMCA is vital to our economy and should be fully enforced.
Talking trade with U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer, Senate Finance Committee Chairman from Idaho, Mike Crapo.
What do you view as a realistic timeline for conclusion of the USMCA negotiations that are currently underway, keeping in mind the importance of business certainty?
There are some issues in USMCA which take a longer time to address. Issues that are quite important. Some of these are related to rules of origin. We want rules of origin in USMCA to be very strong to incentivize production in North America as opposed to other regions that have a lot of excess capacity or non-market practices. But it does take time to develop these. Similarly, I've heard from folks also in Congress about the need to strengthen labor and environment enforcement vis-a-vis Mexico. This can take time as well. That being said, I'm hopeful that before the end of the year, we can have at least options for President Trump and the leaders of Canada and or Mexico to consider potential interim arrangements or things that Canada can do on the one hand and Mexico can do on the other hand to strengthen enforcement, to improve their commitments toward us, and to make sure that we're managing all of the trade issues. So I would love to have between now and the end of the year at least some arrangements, one with Canada, one with Mexico, and then some of these issues that are really important, like rules of origin. I know labor environment is important to a lot of folks here, that take a little more time to have further discussion of that, including with Congress in the following year.
Next, market access for U.S. agriculture exports is also, as you know, one of my top priorities. The administration's agreements on reciprocal trade include many very important market access provisions. Could you provide a status update on the implementation and entry into force of these agreements?
Some countries, such as Argentina and Cambodia, have already started the process of removing tariffs. Cambodia, for example, has already removed all of its tariffs for us. We have some smaller markets that maybe are not huge for us, like North Macedonia, that they've removed all of their tariffs. I had the Malaysian trade minister in my office yesterday, and we talked about their time frame. They're looking to the fall to put through the changes. Again, they're reducing all of their tariffs to zero. They're removing non-tariff barriers that have been a problem for us for a long time. Indonesia is in a similar position of in the fall looking to implement fully all of their commitments. So we have a number of these agreements in place. We have an agreement with Jordan we signed yesterday. They've already taken action to further liberalize their market toward us. We have Israel that has just passed in the Knesset an agreement to accept American standards. So a variety of these countries have already implemented. Others are going through their domestic processes. And, of course, importantly, we have the EU that lowered their industrial tariffs to zero and provided a number of tariff rate quotas for American farmers earlier this month.
What assurances and steps is USTR seeking and taking to ensure that these commitments are durable and enforced over time?
So this word enforcement is so important to our administration. I know it's important to this committee. And trade enforcement, it means tariffs. When you have dispute settlement or a formal process that goes on for years, at the end of the day, if you win, a tariff is the implementing sanction if folks don't do this. So we expect these countries to implement. We expect in the future that these countries will retain these agreements because they've made them to the United States of America. As long as I'm here, you can count on me to use whatever tools I have, whether it's Section 301 or other tools to enforce these agreements. My hope would be that any successor would take the same strong approach to enforcing these agreements and promises.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
In 2023, when we had the big problem in Ukraine, ships were stuck there for 2-3 years. So, you know, before they were able to get out.
Tom Benny with StoneX.
We can take a fair amount of ships out of commission here. And I think I think a lot of the smaller ships that get moving grain into local markets out of that area, I think that the biggest impact is around those. So you'll see perhaps bigger ships coming in from Argentina and the US and Canada bringing wheat into North Africa, and then it gets distributed from there in smaller parcels.
And when it comes to freight rates,
I think you have initially you lose some demand, right? Because all of a sudden you can't get the grain out, right? So you lose a little bit of demand. And I think that, but then over time, you know, and particularly with such an important product as wheat, from a government policy perspective, that you need to absolutely secure your supplies, and therefore over a longer period, it's very bullish freight. You know, particularly as we said, ton miles all of a sudden have to increase, because under normal supply and demand fundamentals, you know, grain comes out of the most efficient place for a particular import. And so over time, if you disturb that, which is effectively what military action does, it disturbs those supply chains. We're seeing that in a number of areas. You know, all of a sudden, those supply chains have to become inefficient effectively. So ton miles increase. And there's an old saying in shipping, you know, that war is good for shipping. And ship owners don't mind it, because effectively, and what we've seen over the last 6 months, ship owners are earning more money than they have for quite a while, because military action has disturbed the supply chain. Not just military action, but tariffs and penalties and trade wars, all these different things affect the supply chain. And when you start to mess around with the efficiency of the supply chains, you start to increase the demand for ships, because ships need to do longer voyages, go to different places. All of a sudden, they can't go to one place, but they have to go to another. And so it's not as efficient as it used to be. And I think you can throw on top of that right now, fuel. You know, the price of fuel is a major impact for shipping. So in the last, you know, week and a half, we've seen effectively Brent rally significantly. I think we hit over $100 a barrel today, and that has an enormous impact on the freight that's now needed to move that cargo. So again, we may initially see a bit of a fall off in demand because of that rise in the price of fuel, but then eventually what you're going to see is people have to feed their populations, they have to get the energy in, and so you create a pent up demand, which then comes back at a later stage, and we saw that in 23 also. So, I think you know, to sort of wrap up military action and problems of supply chains from a freight perspective, longer term they're bullish for freight, and it makes an inefficient supply chain, which will then have to, you know, you'll have to get product from somewhere else.
It's Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
How are you doing with fly control around your dairy?
Kansas State Dairy Specialist, Dr. Mike Brook.
You know, a lot of times when we think about fly control, what we concentrate on is the adult flies, and that's really a lot of times where we focus a lot of our control methods. However, what's the real problem? The real problem actually is the buildup of larvae around our dairy and the population that those larvae will produce on our dairy. And as you think about what you should do for control, it's really important that you think about some of these questions that are actually concerned with where you might find those larvae. So before you reach for the next bottle of insecticide to control the adult flies, let's do something about some of those fly breeding areas that are contributing to that fly population. So when you think about stable flies, the biting flies, a lot of times as you get to this time of the year, we see fewer and fewer of those, which is a good thing. Those tend to have a dramatic negative impact on feed intake as well as milk production. So where do we find those larvae hiding? You know, many times it's around the feed bunk. It's behind the feed bunk. It's where spilt feed has come in contact with moisture. So we have small pockets of debris that can be just loaded with larvae. And of course, all of these become adult flies and add to our problem in the barn. Another primary area that flies utilize for a breeding area and a growing area for the larvae would be calf housing. We got a lot of organic bedding there, usually straw. In some cases, we may have some poor drainage that creates some moisture as well as milk residue from feeding milk, or maybe even the rinsing of the milk feeding buckets as we take care of the calves every day. One of the places that's often missed as we think about the calf housing area is actually that perimeter of the hutch. You know, most of our hutches have a little bit of a ledge at the very bottom. Underneath that is a great place for materials to collect, including moisture, and for fly larvae to develop. So many times when we move those hutches to disinfect for the next calf, we find those areas, but in between time, they serve as a primary area for larvae development. As we think about flies on our dairy, probably the two most common types that you deal with are stable flies and house flies. As we think about pasture cattle, so if we have heifers out on pasture or we have dry cows out on pasture, the situation changes. We need to think about horn flies and face flies. Why do we not see them typically on the dairy? Well, they require fresh manure to lay their eggs in, and that needs to be undisturbed. On the dairy farm, we're usually scraping or flushing maybe a couple of times a day and removing that, so there's really not a lot of fresh manure around for those flies to breed and lay eggs on. So as we think about our efforts to control flies, if things have not worked out very well in your fly control program this year, you might think about where you've been spending your time and maybe where you need to spend time in the future. You know, as we look at our fly control program, maybe 20% of the effort should be on controlling the adult flies and about 80% spent on controlling the larvae. So we have to impact those flies, larvae, where they actually develop.
Dr. Mike Brook, Kansas State Dairy Specialist. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit TexasCorn.org and become a member today.